This is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yes, the Tornado Tony Pinnico.
And Psychic Tom Paget, ready to go.
And we got a whole lot of stuff to talk about. We haven't broadcasted in a while, even though we tried to last week, or the week before Thanksgiving. So it's been a few weeks, and lots and lots of stuff in the news. There's a lot, actually, Fighters Union stuff coming out in the news, and there was a big deal going on, I believe it was today, where they announced that George St. Pierre and a few other active UFC fighters, and Bjorn Rebney, who was the ex-CEO of Bellator, have all got together now to form their own Fighters Union. So, they're calling it the Mixed Martial Arts Athletes Association, I believe. You know, who knows what's going to happen with that, but it's, it sounds
good. Yeah, that's fascinating, especially Cain Velasquez.
Yes.
And Cerrone, I mean, these are guys that are still at the peak of the game. I mean, I think George, of course, I don't know his financial situation, but I would assume George could walk away. And it's not really signed with anyone, so, I mean, major props to them for doing this, but especially to Cain and Cerrone.
Yeah.
Just an amazing risk they're taking. So this is fascinating and long overdue.
Yes, definitely. And I have a whole bunch of stuff along those lines to talk about later on. But the big boxing story, of course, is the, whatever way you want to look at it, the Andre Ward big win or the Andre Ward robbery of Sergey Kovalev. Whatever you want to call it. I believed that Andre Ward got his ass kicked and was lucky to win a few rounds in the end just because he was persevering through the trouble. But, you know, it was definitely reeking of a hometown decision, even though there was some boxing media that scored it the same. I don't know. I forever will say that Andre Ward, AW, now stands for awkward win. Either way, it's bad for him career-wise. It doesn't look pristine, so... You know, we're going to have to really see what happens in the rematch, but, I mean, Sergey Kovalev is going to be determined in half time.
Yeah.
So, be careful. It's going to be a tough one.
Andre has one of those styles, like, he is a less flashy version of a Floyd Mayweather, where, you know, you have to get to him early. Look at a guy like Marcos Madonna, when he fought Mayweather, how much success he had early, because he attacked Mayweather, got him out of his comfort zone, and but then once Mayweather started figuring him out, it was pretty much, you know, downhill for downhill for Madonna from there. And I think, you know, same thing here, that, you know, Kovalev had success early, he got the knockdown, but once, you know, Wood started figuring him out and knowing what he had to do to neutralize Kovalev, and I apologize, I didn't get the chance to see the fight live, and I only caught clips of the replay.
I saw the whole thing live.
He was just, you know, frustrating him. That was the quintessential Mayweather move as well.
Well, I mean, you look at the face of Ward at the end of that fight, and, you know, if it was like, what was it, who's the fighter I'm thinking about? Dan Henderson. If he said, if the judging was based on how the guy looked at the end of the fight, I won. You know? Ward looked like a mess. I mean, his face was peppered. And, you know, obviously, Kovalev studied his style and was able to use his reach and power.
And, like I said, like boxing is a different sport than, you know, mixed martial arts. But if he judged on that criteria, Rocky Marciano sure wouldn't be 49-0. Because he did have fights that went the distance, yeah. And you might have lost every one of them. You know, Vinny Pazienza never would have won a decision. Neither would have Arturo Gatti. Diego Corrales. He had to win every one of their fights by knockout. Smoking Joe Frazier. You know, we're talking about guys that, you know, were willing to go out there and take punishment. And sometimes they did go the distance and won on the scorecards. You know, just battering the guys down.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you remember, Tony, the one thing every fighter you mentioned there had was a very aggressive style. None of those after four name guys who are all on my all-time favorite list, none of those guys ever said, I'm the slickest boxer around. And it kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to pick holes in your argument, but it's well taken.
I'll start in the backyard.
All right.
My feeling on it is, everyone say, well, it was fixed. I mean, come on, I don't think there was any payoffs given to any judges. I don't think anything's that, to that extent. And I've seen worse decisions. But the I've seen far worse decisions. But the problem, I was just trying to be as objective as I could, and I had Kovalev 2 points up, but in a title fight, Ward does have that frustrating style where he can smother and make these rounds close. And the more I thought of this, he was the house guy. The boxing establishment was behind him. And I'm wondering if there was just a tiny bit of subconscious bias with the judges because they want to make the boss happy. They
America
want to
versus
get
Russia?
Invited to the big,
wink, wink.
To the big shows.
Maybe.
And, I'm not saying they were bribed or anything like that. But sometimes you just have to wonder. And I guess we'll see where the rematch goes. But in line with my feeling on that, as I've said, usually the first time around when you have styles like that, you go with the big puncher the first time. In the rematch, yes, the guy, the technician, the guy with the bigger toolbox can make the adjustments, which I'm sure Ward will do, and here we go. It could be just a dreadfully boring fight. So, there you have it. I mean, the judging and some of the mechanics of this, but I just wonder what other sports, say football for example, if one team has 5 touchdowns and the other has 4, but we don't have a scoreboard, and it's up to 3 judges to say, well, we think that touchdown was worth 7 points, and we think the other touchdown was worth 5 points.
Right.
And the team that has 4 touchdowns is going to win, according to what 3 unelected, unaccountable judges are going to say. No other sport would put up with that. No other sport in the world would put up with that.
Exactly.
And
I don't know what the
answer is, because we have beat this to death. We've talked about having former fighters there, but I know both of you guys brought up great points on that, that the stylist, you have to look at the former fighter's style. And there's going to be some subconscious inbred bias on that.
Yeah,
I mean, if you get a guy that's a slick boxer, well, he's going to say Ward won that fight. Get a guy that's a good banger, he's going to go for Kovalev. Maybe there's no answer. And we've talked about having the rounds mentioned, or having the scorecards on a big scoreboard after each round, but I think if that was going to happen, it would have happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I just don't...
Yeah, and I agree on that, Tom. Because once again, you're always going to, get a type of, and I don't want to say bias, but I think that word has a type of negative connotation to it, but a type of, it's like, and I don't want to say favoritism either, there's no right word to say, and if there is, I sure can't think of it right now.
No, I know what you mean. It's not like I'm deliberately biased and prejudiced, and I don't care what, I'm going to mail my scorecard in, it's 118 to 110. No, it's not like that, but it's a very subtle thing. In my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you're going to get a guy like me, and I'm going to look at, the aggressive type of fighters. The fighters I'm going to favor, are your pressure fighters, your guys that like to throw a lot of body punches, your guys that bring a lot of the action, guys that wear guys down, with a lot of pressure. Your Marcianas, your Frakers, guys like that. Because that was my type of style, the type of fighter that I, really admired. Not that I, didn't appreciate the Leonards and the Mayweathers and the Ollies and all those type of guys and the Willie Peps and all them. Also other guys, weren't big punchers, but and obviously before my time, but watching videos of them and reading about them, I really appreciated were guys like Carmen Basilio. Carmen Basilio, he was a pressure fighter, not a big puncher, not the fastest guy in the world. He was a guy that won strictly on pressure
Cerraro, you know, my biggest idol in boxing, and Basilio, the same thing there, just a tough guy, all the willpower in the world, you're not going to break him down mentally, he's coming after you, he's coming to fight, he's hard to hurt, he's in shape, and he ain't going to quit. I remember exactly what he said to Howard Cosell, that famous quote, you know, Carmen, 15 out of the 16 sports reporters say you're going to lose tonight. Well, that 15 of them are wrong.
My problem with
you say something like this, the other sports are going to win some money then.
That was him. But so I don't know. I mean, I know that we've kicked this around before about the judges' angles, and I don't know what the logistics would be of putting their scorecards up, because you know, I know we beat this up, but you know, when I was younger, they said, well, they couldn't put the scorecards up after each round. Because there'd be a riot.
So,
come on.
Really? Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you the one time that I thought was the biggest case in point argument against open scoring, which was just a couple years ago, and it was a fight between Canelo Alvarez and Austin Trout. And it was, I forget if it was in California or Texas, or somewhere that was more Canelo country. You know, heavily Mexican population, you know, he was the obvious favorite. So you go into this fight, and it was a very competitive fight. If, Tom, if you or I scored it, I guaranteed we would have had it something along the rounds of 7-5 with the knockdown. I think Canelo knocked him down in the seventh round with a straight right hand. You know, he wobbled him, and Trout went down. It was a good, solid knockdown. It definitely wasn't a fluke, but it definitely wasn't like he was out on his feet either. Or maybe if you stretched it 8-4. But I think 7-5 with the knockdown was fair. And they're doing the open scoring, and it was every single round is going towards Canelo. So now, instead of what the close fight going into the last few rounds, is a whitewash going into the last few rounds. Canelo's, you know, a little bit, you know, fatigued, and he played it safe. So on the other hand, it's like the corner is in the same. We know what the score is. Canelo, you're way ahead. Basically play the prevent defense. You know, move, hold, you know, just do whatever you got to do. Back off, you got this. You know, or if you didn't go the open scoring, I could see the cornerman in the corner saying, yo, it's dead even almost. You got to win these last two rounds.
So, like I said, just imagine if they had that in football. I mean, this is, you know, to me, it's just nuts. I mean, it's such a disservice to the guy who is being whitewashed. Now, do I think Trout could have knocked out Canelo? No. Do I think that would have been almost a kamikaze mission? Yes, it probably would have been. But I think that Trout should have at least known, okay, now what do you want to do? Do you want to just hang on for the decision and say you didn't get KO'd, or do you want to go for it? He was not sure of that chance. I mean, I don't know what affected him in that fight, but your point's well taken on that, that it was more competitive than a whitewash.
Right. But like I said, with the open scoring, you know, when it came in the last two rounds, like, we got, like, the scores came up, and it was a, Howard Letterman was like, yeah, I got it, you know, say, at the time, say, like, 97 to, you know, 95, maybe, just for example. And then it's, you look at the regular cards, and it's like 99-90.
Something like that. It's like the judges could have mailed their cards in.
It really was.
And so many people were so upset about this. And I mean, it just cut across all lines. Too, and a lot of times there's ethnic stuff going on. Not this time that much.
I just thought watching that fight, and this is where I think at least the judges should have a TV monitor, maybe no volume, but a TV monitor where they can watch not only the fight, but the replays between rounds. Because stuff happens so quickly. That when you're watching TV and you see those replays and they continue to favor Ward getting his ass kicked, you know, and show him getting beat up and show him taking these big hard shots because, you know, just because Sergey's a little bit quicker than people imagined he would be, it might not be seen by the judges. They're just seeing the comeback, and they're getting so... It's like that old thing about studying. You know, you're going to remember the last thing that you read. So try to study in short bursts. And it's the last thing they saw was the comeback attempt. So they kind of forget about how he got beat the fuck out of him in the early rounds.
A couple points to make of it, you know, from a person that has sat down at a judge's table, albeit in the amateurs, and this person has worked corners. I got, you know, a story for both of them. And both of them involved Dr. Cox, you know, my old college boxing coach, and one of the most quotable individuals that I've ever had the pleasure of, you know, meeting, and thankfully got to sit under his learning tree for a number of years. Dr. Cox used to say a lot of times, if he was, you know, judging a fight, and he's like, and he would admit it, and he would laugh, he'd be like, yeah, there was sometimes, you know, every judge in a fight, you know, I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner, what do I have to do tomorrow? Oh my God, I got a judge, who won this film? I want to last 10 seconds, and that's, you know, what I want to fight. But he would always tell us when the fight was over, you know, and ding, ding, that last bell rings, don't you drape yourselves over them ropes. You don't look like a loser. You do not look exhausted. The first thing you do, if you shake your opponent's hand, is you quickly run over to your opponent's corner. You shake the coach's hand. You run back to your own corner, you know. And later in my career, you know, I made a point of doing that, you know. I bounce. Once they go, but when they're bringing us out to the middle of the ring, even though the cards have been tallied, I'm bouncing, you know. I still got a lot left. And I actually had a guy that I work with watching one of my fights on YouTube the other day. It was the Jordan fight when I fought Michael Jordan. And it's when he goes, the one thing I noticed, he goes, he was so flat-footed all the time, just looking like his legs were gone. And he goes, and you were just constantly in motion, like perpetual motion. I said, exactly, that's me.
Was he crying? Was he crying?
So that was one thing Dr. Cox would always say. It's like that last... you know, burst at the end of the round, and then the other part was like just, you know, your body language, how that could sway a judge. Yeah. The other thing, and this goes back to the point you guys just made about the television monitors, you know, judges may be having them because, you know, when you're sitting so close and you're looking up,
yes,
you bad do angle. Not have the greatest vantage point. And I know that from sitting there as a judge, and I know that from sitting in the corners, working in the corners. And the one story I remember, it was 1997. I was scheduled to fight a kid from Penn State. We were in Shippensburg, and he had the flu. So my fight gets canceled. So Dr. Cox says, hey, Tony, Coop is going to do whatever, so he can't help me in the corners. You're going to help me in the corners tonight. Sounds great, Doc. I'll be happy to, you know. So one of the first fights, we had this kid from Lock Haven, Antonio Ward, and I'm still friends with him. Antonio was a tall, lanky kid at 119 to 132 pounds. He was a decent boxer, but, you know, he didn't have a good chin. And he's fighting a really aggressive kid from Shippensburg who pins him in our corner. Now, Doc's on the one side of the corner, and I'm on the other. And I see this kid, Mike Brady, he's throwing haymakers. And he's right on top of Antonio. He's almost like smothering him. And all of a sudden, you see Antonio go down. And the referee starts counting. Doc starts yelling, saying, what are you counting for? He pushed him down. He pushed him down. Because from Doc's vantage point, he just saw this kid smothering and roughhousing on the inside. He did not see the southpaw right hook that detonated on Antonio's chin that left him face down in the heap. Because he pushed him down, he pushed him down while this kid's laying down, face down. He ain't laying face down from no push. And right. I said, Doc, he hit him with a right hook. He's out. Ow. But the vantage point, because you could be sitting, you know, in the middle of the judges, they generally sit like mid-ring, and you could be sitting on this side of the ring, and all the action's happening on the other side in the corner. You're trying to determine what's happening, but it's all in close. Or you're looking straight down 5 feet to your left or your right, and you're trying to see what's landing. You really can't tell. Or you can't tell, you know, if the guy is, you know, the one fighter's back is to you, and the other guy's throwing punches, and he's pulling back. Is his head getting snapped back because the punches are hitting him that hard? Or is he doing the Ali and pulling back and making the guy miss?
Yeah, I mean, some people admire defense a little bit more than offense sometimes, I think it was mostly the people. If it was an honest decision and it wasn't rigged in any way, use a Trump word, rigged. Anyway.
Well, you remember, Rich, you even said maybe we should get the judges elevated, and then we got kind of silly, like on a big tilt-a-whirl or something.
Yeah,
where they're rotating. And then I think our whole plan just degenerated into absurdity. I don't know. Maybe we need artificial intelligence. I mean, now we're getting driverless cars.
Yeah, right.
Supposedly AI can do anything better than we can. But you need that human touch. I don't think that's ever going to happen with AI judges. I just can't imagine.
No, absolutely.
Well, you take the judges' scores, and then you times them by the acupunch, whatever, statistics, who landed more punches, and you have a percentage. Yeah. Then you have the media weigh in. Then you have the Facebook vote. I mean, there's a bunch of ways you can do it, but definitely, I think the simplest way to do it and leave it in the hands of the judges is give them a better view of the fight, because that number one, you got ropes in your way. How are you going to watch a fight with fucking ropes in your way? You might have a ref in your way if it's in a certain corner and the ref is standing in your vantage point. So, I mean, how is it biased to show them an audio version of the fight from the TV cameras? Especially between fights, between rounds, if they're not actually watching, they don't have to watch the fucking corner to figure out if the guy's winning the fight. You know, they should be watching a monitor that shows them the replays. I don't think that's going to be biased. I mean, if the network is that biased towards a fighter that they're supporting, I don't think they're going to purposely show only his good replays. They wouldn't do stuff like that. They're going to show the damage done. So.
Well, all I'm saying about this, though, boxing does not need a black eye now. It's just heartbreaking that.
Transition.
That there was all this damn controversy. And so many people saying, yep, here we go again. I've been away from this stuff for years because of this reason. Now I come back expecting it to be different. And what do we have? Las Vegas judges, same old stuff. Here we are. And I just don't know if there's any solution. I mean, we can't just let them go until someone drops over.
Then 100 rounds.
I will tell you this. The best theories I've heard, and I believe in it, is one that Max Kellerman always says. And Max, you know, I like the way he came up with it. He goes, the way I, you know, and remember, he was doing stuff on ESPN too. You know, before he got with HBO and all that. But Max, you know, would come out and say, when I watch a fight and I judge it, he's like, and obviously he never worked as a professional judge, he was a sportscaster, but he goes, the way I, you know, do my judging is, who would I have rather been that round? Now, obviously, you take out the things like headbutts and low blows and cuts from headbutts and things like that. On a pure boxing base, who would have I rather been that round? If one guy lands, you know, 50 pitter-pat punches and does no damage, but the other guy lands 10 punches, but they are damaging punches. You know, a good shot to the buckles the guy. Body shot that maybe doubles him over. You know, get some hard work in the corner of the torso, and, you know, punch that snap the head back. And he goes, I'd want to be that guy. That's who I want to be that round. I give him the round 10-9. If he's really pummeling the guy and he has him, you know, not down, but he really beats him up bad where, you know, they could have scored a knockdown or, you know, the fight could have been close to being stopped. He goes, you know, then you have your take for a 10-8 round without an official knockdown. But those are the things that, you know, Maxwood came out and said. And you know what? I believe that. I like that, you know, way of doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And that would also negate that automatic 10-8 round if it's a flash knockdown. I mean, I think that's crazy. I mean, there's a time to give a 10-8 round with a legit knockdown, but you both know what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's like, come on, and then the guy gets up and wins the round, and yet the judge is sometimes automatic. Well, 10-8, he got knocked down.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, can you find 6 rounds that Ward won if you watch that fight, bell to bell, every round? I don't know. I don't see it. And he had to win 7. He had to win 7 to get a tie. What had to win 8 if you consider it was a 10-8 round when he got knocked down, if you really want to put it technical.
And that was a legitimate 10-8 round.
So,
and Tom, to bring up that point, this is before you joined us on the broadcast. I was talking a couple weeks ago about the time, Rich and I did the color commentary for the Steve Cunningham, why am I forgetting that guy's name again?
Thomas Adamek.
The first time when they had their first title fight, both of their fights were close. I thought Cunningham clearly won the second fight. And the first fight, I forget, I think I either had it a draw, or I might have had Cunningham shaded by a point. I don't remember. I think I had it a draw because Adamek scored 3 knockdowns in 3 different rounds. And judges gave him all 3 of those rounds 10-8. The problem is, on the one round, Cunningham was slightly winning until the knockdown. And so that fight, you could have gave it 10-8 too, because he was only slightly winning. The second knockdown in the fourth round, Cunningham was dominating that round. He hit Adamek with about 7 straight uppercuts or something ridiculous like that, and was picking the guy's foot up. He was hitting him so hard. Adamek throws a counter like left hook, and Cunningham goes down. So that was a round that clearly Cunningham is dominating, that at best you can only give Adamek a win by a point. Not 2 points, no way. But all the 3 judges gave him 2 points. He wins that fight on a razor-thin margin. I think that's wrong. That was basically one punch. It was a knockdown. It was. I mean, it wasn't like it blew him off of his feet. You know, it caught him. He went down. The third knockdown, I think the fight was over. I mean, he hit him, and Cunningham's whole body contorted. And when he got up, I'm like, this guy's out. And then, I mean, I really didn't appreciate his recuperative capabilities until that night. Before I forget, do want to segue into something else, because we were talking a short while ago about some of our favorite fighters, and Tom mentioned a guy by the name of George Chavallo. Mentioned guys like Carmen Basilio, even though he was before my time, Rocky Marciano, Vinny Pazienza, Sugar Ray Leonard, Arturo Gatti, and of all of those guys, the guy I'm about to say next could not even be mentioned in the same breath, in the same galaxy as these guys. And that's Nicholas Walters, after what he did last week on HBO. Granted, he was losing a fight and he was being outclassed by Vasily Lomachenko, but it wasn't like he was taking a beating. It wasn't like he was taking like a beating like Corrales took from Castillo when he got up off the stool and won by knockout. It wasn't a beating like Gotti took in so many of his fights when he had his hand broken against Mickey Ward and they said, do you want to stop the fight? He goes, no, I gotta keep going. It's not like Rocky Marciano with his nose split in half. You know, not like Vinny Pazienza coming back from a broken neck, and then in his last fight, when they wanted to stop it on a cut, he goes, I've had worse cuts shaving. Not like against Holmes, you know, where he had his jaw broken against Frazier. It wasn't against Frazier in Manila, you know. And this guy is losing a fight, and he's like, no more. He no lost it. Worse than Duran ever did. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway,
what do you guys think on that one?
I don't know. I didn't even read about that fight.
So
Walters lost. No. He quit. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, Lomachenko was winning. You know, Lomachenko pretty much had won every round. Lomachenko was making him look bad. Lomachenko is a fantastic fighter. You know, and it wasn't like he was beating up. It was basically a Duran job. He was getting beat up, and I think Leonard was more taunting Duran. I think Duran did it out of frustration, like, I'm cramping in my stomach, I had a hard time making weight, this guy's, you know, he's irritating me so bad, I can't do nothing about it, I'm done. I think Duran did it on the heat of the moment.
And intuitively, you just figured, if I quit, the headlines are going to be, not Leonard won, Duran quit. The LA Times, right, the front page of the sports section, right there. Duran quits, then retires. Hardly anything about Leonard.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and you know what? You are 100% right. This fight was basically just a flat out quit job. And it was like, you know what? He even said in the corner after seven rounds, nope. They're like, oh, well, he's like, I'm done. Basically, I'm done.
All right.
You know?
You know what?
And I know one guy, and he's one of the guys I know, and I like the guy, but very opinionated. So, of course, before the fight, he's all over, because he's always kind of trashing Lomachenko, and he was all for Walters, the Axe Man's comments, and this and that. Well, then the fight happens, and then...
Oh, what happened? Lost you there.
They have to pay Walters to do that. You know, like, you can't admit you're wrong. You can't admit that the guy you were, you know, putting everything behind.
Oh, I'm losing you, Tony. Can you hear me now? Hold on.
Bad guy for about 15 seconds.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, the last thing I said was, I trashed Walters for his quit job. And then I said, I wanted to get off the subject of something that irritates me, and I want to talk about something in a positive light. And you know, that doesn't happen with me all the time.
Well, anyway.
I'll be asking for your permission.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. What do you want to talk about?
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Do you guys bleed for this yet?
I have not. I have not.
I liked it. I really, really did. Miles Teller was fantastic. Aaron Eckert was fantastic. The guy that played Angelo Pazienza, Vinny's late father,
Vinny
and the guy that played him was actually born in, like, Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, he's not even Italian. But, I mean, he looks so much like Angelo Pazienza.
I thought he was supposed to be playing Lou Duva. I saw him all dressed up.
The guy that played Lou Duva did a good job. The Duvas were not portrayed in a positive light, but I know there was some accuracy regarding that, because Vinny did have a rocky relationship with the Duvas, and he even said in his book, you know, there were times he was frustrated because the Duvas were spending so much time on their 84 Olympic class of Holyfield and Whitaker and Meldrick Taylor and all those guys. That sometimes Vinny felt like he was kind of pushed to the back. And then, they only showed one guy. You only see him for like a few seconds, and they never mention who he is. I only know who he is from reading Vinny's book. And he was an Oriental, like, trainer. Because, like, the Duvas weren't spending a lot of time training Vinny. Like, they were worried about their other guys. So they had this other guy in there, Oriental guy, and he was, like, saying, oh, I can get you to throw 1,000 punches in a round, and you lose all this weight, and this and that, and then it was like, they show him, but he's the one wrapping Vinny in saran wrap when he's trying to make weight for the Mayweather fight.
Right.
And I think, like, the one, and I caught a few inaccuracies, but they had to be edited that way, I guess, to really make the movie flow.
Yeah.
And because I know they start off with the Mayweather fight, and that's the fight, you know, where Vinny really had a hard time making weight, which he was doing at 135, and then 140 again. He was having a hard time making weight. But after the Mayweather fight, he was so dehydrated that he said he went into basically shock. Mm-hmm. He went into shock, and you know, he was in the hospital, and he actually felt like he was passing up through the clouds. Like, he was actually dying from severe dehydration. Duvall, like, they came out and said, Vinny Paziente is basically done as a championship level fighter. I'm not sure if he said that after the Mayweather fight, as they made it look, or if he said that after the Loretta Garza fight, which I think was like Vinny's third loss out of four fights. Then they show him moving up to 154. The fight with Gilbert Delay, they made it look like it was a second round knockout when actually he stopped Delay in the 12th round. And he didn't knock him out, he stopped him.
Right.
But once again, not a big deal, because basically it was, he was an underdog in that fight. Delay was the undefeated champion, and, you know, so that worked okay. And then the only other thing was the after the accident, they made it look like his first fight was against Roberto Duran, and even like the commentary during the fight, like, oh, he's only sparred since then, and this and that, and also he had about five fights before he fought Duran. That was about it. It was he was a year and a half after his first comeback fight that he fought Duran. But that was really it. Everything else, you know, the actors, the actresses did very well. You know, you really felt for the guy, you know, because he's in there and he's saying, hey, you're not doing this to me. And he's having a temper tantrum on the table when they're x-raying him. And I remember reading about him saying that, like, yeah, he goes, I was flailing my arms and screaming and yelling at him. And when they take out the screws, he says, I refused an anesthetic, you know? And he goes, it felt like a 747 went through my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, well, those are only words. You know, it felt like a 747 went through my head. Okay, it hurt, right? But this made you appreciate how much it hurt. Because you see him do a click, and you see the man scream. And he's like, you're going the wrong way. You're screwing him in deeper. And the doctor's like, no, I'm not. You want an anesthetic? No, let's keep going. He does another click, and he screams again. It's like, come on, you're doing it wrong, Doc. He's like, you have to understand. He goes, these things have been in for months. He goes, these bolts have calcified. It's like, they're like locked tight. It's like they're rusted tight. We got to break the calcification.
Yeah.
So it's like, and imagine that. When you're getting this thing unscrewed, it's like basically breaking the calcification off in your skull.
Yeah. Can't be very pleasant. And then one of the things that I remember him saying to us when we were talking at the Rocky Marciano statue dedication, he wanted that green belt, that WBC belt. He wanted that thing so bad. I wanted that green belt. I love that green belt.
I remember he said on like the one time when he was going for the WBC title, and he's like, yeah, they're like, oh, you're making one more chance for, like, a title fight. And he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I've done a whole lot in my career, but I've never got the WBC belt. And I want that green belt because it'll match my couch.
Yeah, one thing I read about Vinny Paz himself is he saw the movie. He saw the movie and it made him cry because the people that portrayed his parents did such a good job. I mean, it was like bringing him back.
Yeah, and I know Katie Sagal, you know, most well-known for Married with Children, playing Peg Bundy. She was also on Dating My Teenage Daughter. She did a good job as Louise Pazienza. And I can't remember the actor's name that played Angelo. Like I said, I know he was born in, like, Northern Ireland. But he looks so much like Angelo Pazienza, it is scary. And he talks like him too, which is like really amazing, you know. And what they did do at the end of this movie, after like the final fight in the movie, and what they do, they show like clips of Vinny's professional career. So you'll see him, like, they'll show like a clip of the Mayweather fight, and he's in his, like, he's like, he had like the Rocky style trunks on, the flag trunks, but red, white, and green. Instead of red, white, and blue, and they show him in that. They show him in the post-fight interview after he beats Gilbert Delay, and he's saying the exact same things he says in the movie. Like, I feel like I should be on a box of Wheaties doing a Gatorade commercial. I should be, you know, going down to Disneyland. I feel like I'm on Top of the World right now. And that's what they do in the movie, and that's exactly the interview he does in real life. And then they show the clip of Roger Mayweather punching Lou Duva after the fight. and they show his parents. And you see that, and you're like, wow, like how legitimate these people are. Aaron Eckhart did a great job as Kevin Rooney. You know, he portrayed, Rooney's shortcomings as well, battling alcoholism. You know, because a lot of people didn't know that about Kevin Rooney. After he, got fired from training Tyson, that, he was, really struggling with alcoholism. And it shows how, their relationship worked out together. And, definitely check it out. And like I said, one of the criticisms I heard on the movie, and like I said, I took it with a grain of salt because I know the man's story. And the one criticism was like the boxing scenes weren't great. But the movie is not like a boxing movie. It's a life movie. It's a comeback movie. The focus of the movie is, the guy that, that they were telling him he was done, he comes back, and then he has, a life-altering, accident that, it's basically, going to ruin his life.
All right, I'm going to blow your guys' minds right now. I'm going to tell you what the pattern for every movie you've ever seen is, what happens. I don't know if I've ever told you this before.
When we interviewed Rooney back in 2008, one of the things I had said to him was, Sylvester Stallone, he released Rocky V too early. He could have stolen the script of your life and made a better Rocky V. And Vinny found it funny, being a big Rocky fan and being one of his inspirations when he was, boxing years ago. But he's, I'm like, yeah, because like Rocky V was terrible. But I'm like, if you would have stolen your script, it would have been that much better of a movie.
Yeah.
But you know what, and the reason it's every cliche out there was because the man's life basically hit these cliches,
Right, it's right. I mean, I don't understand, because I've read that same criticism. And next week I'll be able to, I'm finally going to get to see it. It's been an awful busy work time, but... definitely on my radar for early next week, and let you know what I think. But I mean, yeah, it's a cliche, but it's a great story. It's a great story.
There were some weak criticisms of it, though.
What kind of willpower did this guy have to come back from that?
And here's the thing: it's like if you don't know the story, you're right. You're gonna think it's cliched. I mean, honestly, and the fact that the three of us, basically witnessed all this happening in real time, because hey, I know I'm a little bit older than Rich. I'm about a year older than Rich is, so I was 12-ish maybe when he fought Mayweather. I was 15 when he beat Gilbert Delay for the title, and I remember the car accident. I forget if I saw it on ESPN or if I saw it in the newspaper the next day. You didn't have internet back then like you do now, but it's like, oh my god, and then I remember his first fight back a year later in 1993, and I couldn't watch the first round. Mm-hmm. It was on USA. He's fighting a guy named Luis Santana, who ended up having a 3-fight clusterfuck with Terry Norris after this. But it's like the first round, I was afraid to watch almost. My favorite fighter, and he's coming back from a broken neck, and what's going to happen? And I remember I actually went in the kitchen for the first round, and then I could hear the announcers, and I was like, yeah, Vinny looked really good that round. I'm like, really? So then I went back in, and I was like, and then I watched the rest of the fight. I remember him knocking Santana down, I think in the last round with a left hook, and I'm like, oh shit, I'm like, I was jumping up and down,
Right.
And then a year later, going to one of his fights. Not even a year later. That was not, 6 months later. Because I went to when he fought Louis Hunnigan in 93. Took out the fight poster downstairs.
Sweet.
And it was like unbelievable. I'm like, dude, I'm getting to see past fight live. We never thought the guy would walk again. Then I wanted to go see him fight, his
my favorite of all the quotes that we got him to give us from that radio show was when he talked about Dangerous Dana Rosenblatt, and he goes, "He ain't so dangerous. He's a fucking douchebag."
You know what?
That's Vinny.
I pulled up their first fight on YouTube, and it has all the pre-fight interviews and the post-fight interviews. And, like, the pre-fight interviews was, like, nasty. They're like, whatever he did, like, he got under his... Rosenblatt got under Vinny's skin worse than, like, Brandon.
Yeah.
Next time we get Vinny...
I remember. And it's almost like Vinny's... Even on USA, Vinny's interview almost had to be censored.
Yeah.
He said, this blank punk, you know, is saying this about me. I'm a 3-time world champion. I mean, he was raging before that.
Yeah. And I was watching it the other day. The one thing he's come at this saying, you know, he doesn't want to be anything like me because I'm a multiple-time world champion. I'm the exact guy he wanted to be.
Right. And then, of course, Sean O'Grady's famous... not Rosenblatt, Rosensplat. I'll never forget that.
Next time we get Vinny on the show, we'll have to conference in Dana, see what happens. It was his fucking mind. But anyway, we've been talking about comebacks and, you know, great heroic comebacks and guys that, you know, are boxing heroes because they can come back in a fight and do great things. And, you know, whatever you think about the Ward fight, it was a great comeback. Even if you disagreed that he won, he had some good, strong later rounds. But sometimes, this is my segue, you got to know when to quit. And a guy named Nick Blackwell definitely needs to quit. Even though he's only 26 years old. He had a fight back in March, and he was in a medically induced coma for a week, a fight with Chris Eubank Jr., and he had a disfigured eye and swelling around his skull and brain, and, you know, he almost died. So, I mean, if any of, any of you guys, that happened to you, you'd probably say, okay, you know, maybe it's time to quit, right?
Right.
Yeah, pretty good time. So, guess what happened to Nick Blackwell? He must be addicted to the drug of boxing because he had to have another hit. And he jumped in the gym sparring session with a licensed boxer on November 22nd, and guess what happened? He's back in the hospital. It doesn't look like he's in a coma. But
okay, so he didn't get his license back to fight.
No.
This was just a sparring session in the gym.
8 months after he almost died. Okay? He had to have another hit. He's got to get his fix of boxing. I mean...
How bad condition is he in?
He just says he was taken ill and rushed to the hospital. I mean, so hopefully that's his final warning. This is not for you, buddy. Time to pick a different career.
You guys know how hard it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such an addiction. I mean, just the lifestyle, just the excitement, the self-discipline required, the adrenaline. What's that saying? You never lived it. You've almost died.
Yes. Also, Nick Diaz. We're going to go to a different addiction. Nick Diaz and marijuana. He had a big interview the other day with somebody talking all about marijuana. So it makes you wonder about his UFC comeback anytime soon. But he not only... advocated smoking it and doing it and, you know, being high when you fight. But he also said that his brother, who was just suspended or warned or had some minor slap on the wrist for smoking something called CBD, he said this is his own brother, threw him under the bus. He says in a public interview, that wasn't CBD, he was smoking chronic. That was some kush. Basically said he's smoking real marijuana. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out because his brother swore he was smoking something else. And, you know, if this comes up before the commission again, does Nate just go in there and be like, nah, my brother was smoking weed when he did that interview? I mean, what's his excuse there? That's not going to look good. Your own brother says you're smoking the real stuff.
Rich, if you can send me a link to that, I'll try to find it myself. I got to do this. So, in other words, he says he has fought stoned before. Did I hear that right?
Yes, I mean, he's been busted for it. He says
I could understand alcohol, I could understand meth or something. I mean, weed is such a laid-back, you know, guy can't even change the channel, you know? Jeez.
He made a great joke in the interview, too. He said, I am the number one athletic stoner besides Michael Phelps.
He's
the face of it. Also, one of the other quotes, he says he does think it is a performance-enhancing drug. So.
Well, I just don't see where the aggression would come from. I don't get it.
There's some fighters that might argue that the like opposite of the Rocky movie where he says fear is your friend. Some people might argue that. You know, you have too much tension or nervousness is going to take you off your fight game, so you have to be completely relaxed, which I imagine that's probably
a lot of people don't get relaxed on weed. They have to go do things. Yeah. You know, especially fight in front of a million people. Unbelievable. What an incredible human being he is. Wow.
Crazy stuff. Anyway. Some more crazy stuff. I don't know what it is with Anthony Pettis, but the guys in Milwaukee love fucking with his cars. This has been a news event a couple times now. Wednesday morning, he offered a reward, Anthony Pettis, for information
it's
that identifies...
Now, the event you've been waiting for has arrived.
Stop that. I don't want to know. Right now. Alright. He's... wanting a reward, putting out a reward for information that identifies young people seen on video going to a vehicle outside his home. He said the video obtained by...
This happened again?
Yes. Two unidentified men pulled up in a car in front of his Milwaukee house. They first tried to get into the brown Cadillac there, then opened the unlocked white Range Rover and removed property. So, I mean, first note to self is, Anthony Pettis, you've had two cars burned in your driveway. Why are you leaving your door open? Everybody should lock their doors is the first rule at the Pettis household after that incident, I would think. But anyway, the dispatch log reports the case, and the video show scorch marks are clearly visible in the driveway from the October fire that damaged three vehicles. And that crime remains unsolved. And there's some pretty crazy video of these cars getting burned in Pettis' driveway. So I don't know if Pettis got himself on the wrong side of organized crime or what's going on there. But
this
get a garage, buddy.
Anything MMA related or anything like that?
Go live in a gated community.
Just disgruntled fan, you know.
Jeez.
This sounds way bigger.
Yeah, I guess he was supposed to take a dive and he didn't. There's rumors. I started. Anyway, crazy story, so just thought I'd mention that. Another thing that I wanted to get to before we get too deep into the show is the UFC fight where Conor McGregor beat Eddie Alvarez, and of course, Chris Weidman got his face split apart by a beautiful flying knee. The other most exciting fights of the night, but the two biggest moments I think on that card were Miesha Tate backstage telling Dana White, "Fuck you, you're not my boss anymore." So she gave a literal "f you" to Dana White. That I would have been loved to have been there and seen it. But Dana White was kind of funny in his response to this, and he said that basically, "Oh yeah, you should get a job here at the company with the UFC. I'll get you a job, and I can still be your boss."
Well,
but he's trying to convince her to go to the hospital.
Them having dinner a few nights later, so maybe that's going to come to fruition.
But Dana White was a big critic of Miesha Tate for a long time in her career, and I bet she was waiting for that moment. Retired, had a great career, unbelievable moments. We interviewed her on our show back in, 2011 now. It was after...
2012, because I just came on board.
Right. So we spoiled Tom right away. Gave her Misha Tate. But yeah, and it was right after her Ronda Rousey fight. And one of the most compelling parts of the interview is when we talked about a couple things. Number one, we talked about women's wrestling and how I was always inspired to bring women on the show because when I was a wrestler in high school, there was a woman on our team who was just unstoppable. I mean, she showed up to practice every single day. She got, like, harassed and, you know, called the man and stuff like that. But, you know, she did it. She showed up every day, and she lasted all the years that I was there and actually got a varsity match by the time she graduated. And it was just incredible. So Misha was like, that was me, you know, when I relayed that story to her. And she described her struggle from that point on to just prove herself. And especially after that armbar that she did not tap for. She let it get extended. And about that horrific injury and the steps that she had to take to get back into the cage was just astounding. I mean, I just could listen to it 100 times and go, wow, you know, that's commitment. I tried to play the clip last week from this country song, May We All. It's a collaboration. And there's a part of that song that says, may we get a little bit stronger from the hurt times. And that was what she did. And she come back, and she ended up getting the belt after that. After that horrific injury, she came back, and she fought Ronda again, and lasted longer than anybody had previously lasted with Ronda. She did get caught in another armbar, and she taps quicker than she did the first time. I mean, she didn't tap the first time, but just an incredible career. And to have her,
thing for her would be the fact that she never got that third shot. You know, once she got the belt,
right?
She was in such a good position to get that third go around with Ronda as the champ.
Yeah,
would have been fun.
It would have been fun, but, you know, Ronda has different priorities now, and people that got upset about her not getting the opportunity to fight certain people at certain times, I always go back to that Ronda is in a different world now. She's got her taste of Hollywood, and she's going the direction of Gina Carano. She said it herself, her time is limited in the fight game, and the way that MMA is today, it's not like boxing, where you can sit back for 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, and not have a fight. You got to fight. If you're capable of fighting, and you're not on the sidelines for an injury, you got to fight. So, people do not want to wait. You're a fighter, you're not going to wait for Ronda Rousey. No matter how big a payday you might be told is going to be, you're not going to want to wait. And that's where I give her credit, and where I give Holly Holm credit for fighting her and taking the belt. I mean, for standing up to her and, you know, risking the belt. And she almost won that fight. I mean, if you look at it in a lot of ways, she could have won that fight. But just shit happens, you know? Desperation kicks in, and Misha wanted that belt bad enough. And, you know, she didn't have it long, but she got it. And, you know, few people get the chance to do that. And women's MMA, I mean, I give it so much more respect than a lot of the guys in some cases, because even though they had a, you know, smaller talent pool to deal with, because women don't commonly take fighting as the course of a career. I mean, not that men, you know, all kinds of men do, but it's more common for men than it is for women to choose that career path. And, you know, the women that do have to be pretty tough individuals overall. And they, you know, everyone I've met is. So, I mean, just great respect to her, and I'm so glad to hear that story that she said that to Dana White when he tried to get her to go to hospital. She said, fuck you, you are not my boss anymore. No. So that was awesome. And then the other fuck you that I didn't like is on a completely different tack that's going to take us into some of these fighters union stories. Conor McGregor had the big win over Eddie Alvarez, and he took the opportunity on microphone and on the camera to bitch out people for not having the belt ready, and to say out loud that you cheap motherfuckers that just paid $4 billion for this organization can't get my belt out here. And that fuck you I don't think was necessary. I mean, you know, just because they didn't get the right exact belt that you just won, and you want the two belts there at the same time, I mean, that's no call for treating people like that that you work for. And if you are going to be that brazen and bold, you know, do it for a good purpose and not just to promote yourself. And, I mean, I do respect the guy's talent. I think he did a great thing. But I really want to see him in there with somebody with the same reach and a little bit deeper UFC experience. Because as much as you can hype Eddie Alvarez out, he spent most of his career in Bellator. And Bellator, for most of these years, has been more of a feeder league until they've gotten more UFC fighters over there and even the playing field a little bit. So, I mean, Conor has had more fights in the UFC than Eddie's had. But I still don't think he's been truly, truly tested other than that first Nate Diaz fight at a crazy weight for him. But at his own weight, I mean, he's really... Yeah. And he's been stripped of the featherweight title now, so he's not going to be able to get that back. But I think that's a good thing for him because he doesn't need to cut that kind of weight anymore. He's got to stay.
Well, let's see that. Nurmagomedov, that's the fight. Hopefully he'll get it.
Yeah. Well, he's supposedly going to be on the sidelines.
He's talking a lot of trash about Conor, too, you know. So I think that'll be quite a test.
And if you think Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather is going to happen, I doubt it, but if you're a conspiracy theorist on this, you might use this next story as evidence because... California has granted McGregor a boxing license. McGregor's coach, John Kavanaugh, said to a newspaper, The Sun, the Irishman and Mayweather, quote, are in talks for the potential boxing fight, and 2017 could be the year we see the two clash, unquote.
Oh, please, no!
In talks. You know what in talks means. You know, Mayweather is saying no, and Conor is egging him on, calling him up and harassing him. That's not talk. That's talking at him, not talking with him.
You know, I don't know if you guys caught Teddy Atlas talking about that, but
I didn't, but I'm sure this is funny.
Yeah, it's like he was just saying how ridiculous the whole thing was in the first place. Like, he paid both sports the respect that they deserve. Like, he said that the level of boxing in MMA is just not there. It's a whole different level of striking. And he said, now, as far as in an MMA match, you know, the MMA guys can do so much more. That may be another story, but put them into a boxing ring against a high-level pro, it's a mismatch. And he didn't do this disrespectfully. I mean, he just was stating facts, and I'm glad I didn't have to debate him because I wouldn't have been able to. I agree with every word he said, so I'll see if I can find that link. Send you guys.
You know, I was at last Friday when we started our Christmas tree work. I was there, and a lot of the guys that I work with are, you know, they're more MMA guys than they are boxing, you know? So, of course, the one guy brings up the Mayweather McGregor thing, and then guys like, yeah, you know, whatever, and they said, what do you think about it? I said, I think it's a mismatch.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah.
All day.
And the UFC, when I said, whoa, they already said if it happens, it's going to be a boxing match. And if it's a boxing match, it's a mismatch. I said, and the thing I've said multiple times, and I'll say it again, it's like taking the fastest high school linebacker in the country and putting him in a sprint race with Usain Bolt. You're going to beat every high school linebacker in the country easily, but you're going to get destroyed by Bolt. And I said, the fight goes four rounds. What? No, McGregor's going to bring it to him. I said, oh, really? Then it goes three, maybe two, because he's going to walk right in. Yeah, but he can throw hands. He can throw hands for an MMA fighter. He's got good boxing skills for an MMA fighter. There is a difference between good boxing skills against an MMA fighter and good boxing skills against the most elite boxer in the world right now.
I mean, it's almost insulting that we're having this discussion. You know, I mean, who is asking this question? What level are they at? Well, they're not at our level if they're even talking to you serious about that, Tony. Nick summed it up years ago when it came to talking about Mike Tyson, how he would do in a fight with Mike Tyson. And they were saying how wrestlers can't punch. And he said, well, of course not. Boxers punch in a whole other dimension. That's boxing thing. He says wrestling's thing is the clinches. And he just gave a complete breakdown of that we're talking apples and oranges. And, you know, because in an MMA fight, I mean, when Conor was getting lit up by Nate Diaz in the first one, he took it to the ground. Well, if this is boxing, you ain't taking it to the ground, and you're not able to use knees, elbows, kicks, nothing like that. The clinches are different. This is, there are some similarities, but the level of boxing is on a whole other level. Because, and it has to be. Why wouldn't it be? This is all boxers do.
And that's the one thing I said, and I remember bringing this up years ago just with, not even MMA, I was bringing up with a lot of times kickboxers. A lot of times, you would see kickboxers, a lot of times if they tried to transition to regular boxing. Now, I remember a fighter back in the late 80s, early 90s by the name of Troy Dorsey. Troy Dorsey was a 122-pounder, 126-pounder, tough little guy, you know, cut real bad all the time, had a good couple fights with Jorge Paez, and Troy Dorsey was a former kickboxer. Troy Dorsey couldn't break an egg with his punches, and someone's like, well, why do you think that is? And I couldn't figure it out at the time, but then years later, it kind of dawned on me, because a lot of times, these guys that are kickboxers, they were so used to generating the power in their legs, and they would always kind of have one leg up off the ground, that they weren't using their legs as part of the punching power. They would throw more arm punches. They would throw a right cross, almost like a boxer throws a jab. They would throw that right cross to maybe set up a kick.
Exactly. So, and in those old rules of kickboxing where you couldn't kick below the waist, they weren't doing Muay Thai rules back in the 80s. A lot of times you'd see the guys, you had to have a minimum number of kicks, so they'd come out and throw the kicks, and then it would be bad boxing, just bad boxing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why the sport died out. You don't even hear about it. Now we have K-1, and that's different, but back then, that American-style kickboxing, it just faded out. I mean, that's all it was. It was bad boxing.
All right. Wow. We're going to put that story to bed because I don't think it's ever going to happen. But keep dreaming, Connor. Keep
dreaming. Please put it to bed. Please!
All right. For a little while, anyway, until it comes back up again. Like a dead body that has not been cemented properly in the bay. It's going to pop up again.
Guys, before I forget, because I am going to have to segue this into something else. Because this is, I'm gonna hit you guys a good one. And thankfully, our show is R-rated because, and foul words are allowed to be said, because I had to use some a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay, let's hear it. I go to the LA Fitness the other night, and somebody, I thought, wanted to throw hands with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And as you guys know me, you've both met me, you've seen me in public events. You've seen things I do on the internet and all that. I tend to be, for a guy that was a fighter, and still am, he still lives inside of me, it's like the Incredible Hulk. You don't want to let him out. I try to keep him bottled up, you know? And my boxing workouts now, they're intense, but, you know, they're not violent like, the, you know, sometimes like, you know, they have to be, you know, in that type of sport. But I'm a generally fun-liking guy. But if you get him to come out, it's not pretty. The other night, I go to the LA Fitness, like I do every night after work.
Wearing a Trump t-shirt.
What I always do in the wintertime is I have my clothes in the car in my gym bag. I don't have a big area at work to bring my gym bag in, so I leave them in the car. As soon as I get to the gym, I'm in my shirt and tie. You can tell I'm dressed up nice. I'm not sweaty or anything. And I bring my clothes in the sauna to warm them up. Then I go take my shirt and my tie off and all that. And I come in the sauna and I get changed, you know, so my clothes aren't cold. I don't like cold clothes. So I go in there the other night. There was about two older guys and a young, Russian looking guy. Probably about 6'2", only probably about 170 pounds. Real tall, real thin with a big nose. I walk in there and I put my clothes next to the sauna. And he goes, "What are you doing?" And I thought he was first asking, "Why do you do that?" And I said, "Oh, I said I always put my cold clothes in here so they can warm up before I put them on. Don't get them out of here. I don't want to smell your laundry." I said, wait a minute, stop, Tony.
You don't know this guy?
No, never seen him before.
So he's giving you orders, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, it gets better. So I said, whoa. Who do you think you're talking to, buddy? And Grenito started to come out. And he's like, "Get your clothes out of here. I don't want your laundry in here." I said, "This is not my laundry, dude." I said, "These are my gym clothes that I've yet to wear today that I want to warm up. They sat in my car all day and they're cold. I don't care." I said, "Well, listen, I'm putting them here. I'm going to go take my work clothes off and I'm going to come in here and get changed. I'll be back in about 10 seconds, all right?" He goes, 10, 9. I said, "Fucking smartass." I said, "Why don't you watch your mouth, you asshole?" I said, and I started to get real mad. I said, "I'll be right back." So I go in there, I take my shirt off, I take my tie off. You know, I come stomping back in. He goes, "That was about a minute." I said, "You know what? You can go shut your fucking mouth." And I said, "Why don't you shut the fuck up?" And he's like, "There will be changes around here." I said, whoa, there's going to be changes? What, do you own this place? Do you?" I said, "I never said I did. But I've been here 3 years, dude, and I've been doing this for 3 years. So what do you think you're going to tell me what to do?" "Well, I'll talk to management." I said, "Oh, no. I'll be talking to them in a few minutes. But right now," and I'm looking at him, and I said a few things, and he gave me a look, and he had this smirk on his face. Pulled a clubber line out. A clubber lag line. I said, "Why don't you take that stupid smirk off your face before I smack it off?"
Jesus.
Yeah. And he looked at me again. I said, "What?" I said, "Take that stupid smirk off your face. What about your face?" I said, "What about my face? You don't like it? You want to go outside and change it?" So, now, of course, this is the week that all the management staff has changed. I was friends with the old management staff, but I'd walk in there and they'd all yell tornado time. Now I only know one girl that works the front desk. So I'm like, "Sam, got a problem. Some guys, trying to start a fight with me in the locker room." She goes, "Oh, Jesus Christ." She goes, "Well, I can't go back there." She goes, "Let me grab one of the managers." So I go back to the manager. They're like, "Yo, we got a problem." I'm like, "Listen." I said, "I've been here for years." I said, "I know you guys don't know me, but I've been here for 3 years." And I said, "This is what's going on." So they send the one guy back there. As I'm walking in with him, I said, "Listen, I'm going to point him out, but I'm going to get out of there. Because if he says a word, I'm going to blast him." He's like, "Okay, let me handle it." So as he's walking out of the sauna, I said, "Yeah, there he is.